Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, Larry Mueller here, and it's really nice to be back after a week or so away playing a golf tournament in Saskatchewan, Canada, and then really had a good time. Saw lots of elk and deer and insects of all kinds, including a few, not too many yet, I guess, butterflies. And that brings me to today's topic to begin our program, butterflies. In fact, the butterflies of the North Woods, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan. Larry Weber is our guest. We've had him on before. He's an award-winning Duluth science teacher, photographer, lecturer at the Marshall School. He's the author of Butterflies of the North Woods, and he's also the author of Spiders of the North Woods, distributed by Adventure Publications. So we're really pleased to have Larry with us today. And if you have some questions about butterflies, we hope you will join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. Give a call. We'll be glad to get you online. And Larry Weber's online, by the way. Larry, hi. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, hi, Larry. It's good to thank you so much for asking me. I'm always willing to talk about the Northwoods critters and, of course, butterflies. Butterflies occupy a unique position in today's society. They are a kind of insect that almost everybody likes, and that is quite unusual. And I find that when you talk about butterflies, people don't say, oh, yuck, or something like that, like they do for so many insects. I want to start first by praising Wisconsin Public. I live in Minnesota. I am right now calling you from Duluth, Minnesota. But I've been a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I listen to it frequently, and I have nothing but praise. You are fabulous. Just a wonderful, wonderful station for the Ideas Network and all the programs you have. And so,
well, Larry,
I hope I could add a little bit to that today.
Well, I tell you what, you always do a wonderful job on the show, and we really appreciate having you because you're really enthusiastic about butterflies.
Yeah, well, they ought to be. They're worth getting enthused about. I want to talk about the phenology, the spring phenology of butterflies. You know, most people think of butterflies as being something of the summer, and the really big month of butterflies is July. We'll soon be getting into June, and along with June, of course, that brings in many more butterflies, but the biggest peak is in July. But the spring phenology of butterflies is usually overlooked. We start with butterflies way back in March. You get some mild days in March, and there is a group of butterflies collectively called the angle wings. They're called that because they have a little cut in their upper wing, a little angle, and they hibernate as adults. And when we get these mild days in March, virtually every year, I don't think I've ever had an exception, I will see some in March. Maybe the best known of these is a butterfly called the morning cloak. It's very dark pattern. It has light around the edge. I had a few years ago where we had a very mild early spring, and I saw one on the 7th of March. Now, when they come out that early, there isn't a lot of flowers and bloom, so what they do is they seek out the sap, the flowing of the sap. And, of course, that's the same thing I was doing on the day I saw it. I was tapping maple trees with my students, and the butterfly was out there getting the sap as well. There's a series of other ones that hibernate as adults, question mark. They're both called that because of markings on the underside of their wing. There is a butterfly called Compton tortoiseshell and its cousin called the Milbert's tortoiseshell. They also hibernate as adults. Then when we get to about the 1st of May, the first ones to emerge from a chrysalis start showing up. And the first one consistently in this area is a very tiny blue one that some of your listeners may still be seeing recently. It is known as the spring azure. It's very tiny. It could fit on your fingernail. The upper part of the wings is blue. The lower part is white with some black spots. When they start showing up in early May, they're quickly followed by the white ones we call cabbage or white butterflies. And then this year, in early May, I saw a black swallowtail.
Oh.
Now, yeah, that was quite a surprise. Then as we continue to go through the month, all of us start looking for the first monarch. Well, I have been keeping records here for close to 20 years in the Northwoods country of this area. And until 2 years ago, my average date was about the 30th of May. Last year, I had students out for a walk on the 24th, and we saw a monarch. And then this year, we were out walking again on the 18th. and we saw a monarch.
Oh.
Now, that wasn't just a quirk, because before the day was over, the students saw another one, and I saw another one. So they really exploded after that. This past week, there's lots of them, and then a friend of mine who does a population count by looking for the eggs on little milkweeds found literally hundreds of them. So they are not only back, they are already starting to lay eggs.
Oh,
so
interesting.
Now, that gets us up to the present day with butterflies.
Well, I tell you what, we've got lots of people who have questions for you, so let's take a couple of calls. Lisa in Appleton will give you a chance. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, I'm so glad to be on the air. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about butterflies and then a question about spiders real quick. We were up north in Forest County. We have some land there this last weekend, not too far from Wabino, and we saw a lot of yellow swallowtails, and they seem tired. And one of them was so slow that I put my finger on the ground in front of it, and it crawled right on top of it. Of course, my kids are crazy. And then my second question before I hang up is, my girls are sure that there are lots of poisonous spiders in the woods, and I keep telling them that there aren't. But if you could just talk about that a little
bit, too. I'll take the yellow butterfly first. Tiger swallowtails is what you saw. Now, whether they were tired or not probably depended on weather conditions. Last weekend was, depending on which weekend you're referring to, the weekend of the 19th and 20th up north was a very chilly weekend. And yes, we did have winds from the north. And both of those, too, would slow down the activity of any butterflies that will have emerged. Tiger swallowtails typically emerge in late May. So what you probably saw was some very recently emerged. Now, when you emerge at this time of year, you have a problem with food. And though they do very well in late May, and there's a lot of trees that are in bloom, you just may have come across some that had trouble finding the food. And I would say with a little bit of resting, they probably would have done just fine. Now, in regards to the spider, and I'm so glad you did ask a spider question. Unfortunately, there's a long answer, and it's a bit of a confusing answer. Virtually all the families of spiders, and there's only one exception, virtually all the families of spiders have venom glands, and yes, in that sense, they do have poison. However, virtually every one of them is non-poisonous to humans. And the really dangerous spiders that we always hear about, I always talk to people about spiders, and the first one they mention is Black Widow, and the next one they mention is Brown Recluse. Well, if they're going to make it this far north, they're going to get transported here, and then they don't survive in our cold temperatures. So as far as safety, yes, they are safe. They are not going to harm us. Many of them cannot even penetrate our skin. But, of course, we all hear the other stories.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. Judy in Platteville will give you a chance. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
We have lots of yellow swallowtail down here because we keep the prickly ash around. So we've got a bumper crop, I think, this year. They're out already.
Yes.
But my question concerns some strange-looking caterpillars that I have crawling around on my fuchsia. Now, I have a book here of caterpillars, but it doesn't have anything like this critter.
What's the book you have?
Let's see. It's Peterson's Guide.
Okay. There's two other books you should check. In this series of Butterflies with Binoculars, that whole series of books, there's another one, Dragonflies with Binoculars and so forth. Well, there is one on caterpillars.
Okay.
And that one does mostly with caterpillars of butterflies.
Okay.
And then there is a book by a guy named Wagner, which is caterpillars, for the most part, of moths. Now, moths far outnumber butterflies. Matter of fact, something like 95% of Lepidoptera, the group they belong to, are moths. And so what you're probably seeing is a species of moth, and it can get very, very complicated, and I probably can't tell you much on the phone. But nevertheless, your reference to yellow butterflies, what you have, swallowtails down there, is different than what we have up here. Wisconsin is blessed with two kinds of tiger swallowtails. In the north, we have the Canadian tiger swallowtail or Canada tiger swallowtail, and in the south, it's the eastern tiger swallowtail, and that's what you're seeing down there.
Okay. Well, now, about this caterpillar, it's a rear horn and four sets of rear legs, three sets of front. It's relatively dark green with a black on top almost, and then three light yellow stripes.
Yeah. Once again, I probably would have to get a good look at it. What happens with caterpillars is they may have a pattern, but as they grow, they shed, and that pattern doesn't necessarily stay with them throughout their shedding times.
Oh.
So it's pretty difficult. I'll tell you what, a great learning experience is for you to just watch them grow up.
Well, that's what I'm doing, but I don't know how much of my fuchsia I want to share with them because basically they've just about stripped it clean.
Yeah,
and there's
yeah.
only three of them that I have here. The first one I thought it looked a bit like a celery looper, but then I got to seeing no, considering their progression, that's definitely not what it was. But
yeah, does it move? Does it move like an inchworm?
No, it really doesn't loop, no.
Yeah, okay, because that right away is going to cut it down a lot. An inchworm is a moth caterpillar,
right?
Geometrid moth caterpillars, and it's a very huge family. And if it does not move like that, you've quickly eliminated a very big group of moths. Maybe someone out there who does grow fuchsia can tell you.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Judy, thanks for calling.
Thank you much.
Yep, appreciate it very much. And you can join in with your question. We're talking about butterflies of the North Woods, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan. That's the title of the book written by Larry Weber, our guest today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's turn to Bob in Darlington. Bob, hello to you.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, my son is a dermatologist up in Rhinelander.
Yeah.
Rhinelander, Wisconsin. And he's been there for many years. And here about 4 or 5 years ago, this gentleman came in with a real heavy, dark black spot in the middle of his, the back of his hand. And a kind of a red streak was starting to go up his arm. His breathing was becoming a little compromised. And so he started treating him with IV drip with prednisone. And then he sent him to a special burn center and I think probably an insect special hospital in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And he was treated there for a day or two. And then his wife called a couple of days later and thanked him profusely, thinking that he probably was bitten by a brown recluse.
In northern Wisconsin.
Yep. Well, it's certainly possible, certainly. But like I said, they get transported. And I wouldn't doubt that it happens. I have known cases of some of the spiders, brown recluse, black widow, in northern Minnesota. And when I find out a little bit more what's going on, it turns out that we are living in an area of the country where a lot of people vacation from the south. And when they bring things with them, including boats and so forth, they will transport them. The other place they sometimes get transported is transporting of plants and bales of hay and things like that.
Oh.
I'm not doubting that they can happen and can show up. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's the populations we don't have are not a thriving breeding population. Now, maybe with the temperature changes in the future, we might see that happen more. I used to live in the state of Missouri, and both those two kinds of spiders were quite common down there, but people lived with them, and
yeah.
You just didn't hear much happening.
Yeah,
I know the tarantulas are in Oklahoma. And
yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can find tarantulas even a little further north than that. But once again, that's an exaggeration. What they do is possible to be painful, but usually it doesn't go beyond that.
Interesting.
About that he probably made the right decision.
Oh, yeah. That's what it sounds like.
Thanks, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll get to Ruth in just a minute. Larry Weber, our guest today, author of Butterflies of the North Woods. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And you can join in if you'd like as we talk butterflies with Larry Weber. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Ruth in Cable, you're next. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. I have a question about monarchs. Our grandchildren usually come to the Cable area to visit us every summer towards the end of July, beginning of August. And one of their favorite things is to collect caterpillars and then watch them develop. The monarch ones. And my question is, the last couple of years, at that time, we were hard put to find them on the milkweed. It seems, though, like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, they were profuse. that time of year. And I'm just wondering, do they form all throughout the summer, and is it different years?
I think you answered it right there by saying different years. They are a critter that is highly dependent on their wintering area, and then when they come back, finding enough food, which for them in the caterpillar stage is milkweed, and a lot of it depends on that. Now, one of the things that suffers when development takes place is a lot of milkweed can get cut down, and when that happens, of course, we're taking away their food for the caterpillar stage. But I would say we're getting some population fluctuations. I'm hopeful that from what I've heard so far this year, that may be going back up. You also bring up another interesting point. The generation that comes back here in the spring, that are arriving back here right now, they will lay eggs soon, and their babies will grow up. And by late summer, the time you're talking about, that generation will lay eggs. Okay. That is not a migrating generation. The ones that you're collecting with the children and raising, that is the generation, by the time they reach maturity in late August or September, they're the ones that will migrate. So it gets a bit complicated for the monarchs. They have a migrating generations, and then they have one particular generation that stays still.
But you're saying the ones that we would get would be the migrating ones.
Yeah, they are the migrating ones.
Okay, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Harry in Springbrook, your turn. Hi, Harry.
Well, hi, Larry, and hi, Larry.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Your last caller kind of touched on my question, and it was about the life cycle and lifespan of the monarch and their migration pattern. I was wondering specifically if the monarchs that migrate from the Northwoods here do make a migration all the way to Mexico, and then if those are the same butterflies that migrate all the way back here in the spring, or if there's a generation in between there.
Yeah, there is a generation in between. It depends on where you live, but pretty much for the whole state, it goes like this. They leave us in September. They fly all the way down to parts of the area in Mexico. It's not that far from Mexico City. It's up in the mountains. We checked with the students in the Duluth area. From here to there is 1,200 miles, and as I tell my students, they fly this with wings that are no thicker than a piece of paper. Anyway, it takes them a while to get there, but they eventually get there. Then they rest in these huge numbers that we've all seen pictures of, resting up in the trees in the mountains there. Gets to be about February, and they start getting restless, and they bend their flight north, and they get as far as Texas. Now, in Texas, they find milkweed, small milkweed plants that are early in the season. They lay their eggs, and then they die. Now, that's the end of that generation. The babies grow up, and the ones from Texas continue the migration to come back here. Now, don't ask me how they know where to go from the previous. I don't have any idea. All right, anyway, they come back here, and the ones that arrive back here at this time of year, they will lay eggs, and they will die. They will not migrate away. They will give their birth, they'll give eggs to the generation, the summer generation that stays here. They don't migrate. And then it will be their babies that migrate. So three generations per year for the most part.
Interesting.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call.
Larry, I want to interject something here. Monarchs are not the only migratory butterfly. A lot of time, that's all we hear about. But this year, we're having an influx of two other butterflies. One of them is a red admiral. This is a butterfly that has quite a bit of black on it, but it has red markings on each of the four wings. And in most springs, we don't see much of them at all, but this year there's quite a large number of them. I see them every couple days. Seems like every clear day I see them. The other one is the painted lady, is a well-known migrating butterfly, also called thistle butterfly. It has a cousin called the American lady, and that seems to be quite common this year. So it's not the only one that migrates. Like I said, it's one we usually hear about.
Yeah.
The other ones don't migrate as far.
And as I look in your book, you've got some great photography, great pictures of both the American Lady and the Red Admiral. In fact, talk a little bit about your book.
Yeah, well, you have the purple one?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the second edition.
Right.
We originally came out in 01 with the first edition,
right.
And the idea was that people would see common butterflies in your own neighborhood where you could identify, and we define the neighborhood as being the North Woods. Well, we came up with about 60 different butterflies, and yeah, they're the ones you're most likely to see. So what happened shortly after the book came out, people were asking me about a couple of butterflies that were not in the book. So we decided the thing to do was to be more inclusive, and we doubled the number. And so when the book came out last year, we now have about 125. We also try photographing the butterfly both from above and from below. And anybody out there who wants to get interested in butterfly either looking or butterfly photography, keep in mind that you need to see it both with its wings spread and its wings closed. And wings spread is often done. They'll often sit in the sun basking with their wings open. And then they will, sometimes when they close their wings, that means they're warm enough or it means they're trying to hide. And you need to look at it from the underside as well, because many butterflies, there's quite a difference.
Well, it's interesting, and the photography in the book is great. Did you do the most of the photography?
I did. When the first edition came out, I did most of the photography, and then there were some photos I was lacking when we doubled the number of species. So I think roughly a third of these photos are mine, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good
question. And most in my right in my own neighborhood, right in my own backyard.
Wow, great. Dave in Western Dane County, we'll go to you next. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. Our butterflies, pollinators, and you know, with the honeybee problems we're having, and should talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great question. Butterflies are definitely pollinators. Almost any insect that goes to flowers, and if you watch butterflies, they will pick up nectar with their long tongue. They definitely transfer pollen with the rest of their body as well. Will they take the place of the honeybee? The answer is a definite no. There is just a lot of flowers that butterflies don't go to that the honeybees will go to. There remains to be seen just how much this whole honeybee thing is going to impact things. We're going to have to just stand by and watch. I did hear one person say that a lot of native bees are now being pollinating in them. Honeybees are not native, but bumblebees and sweat bees, and there's a number of other ones, are native, that maybe they will start being a better of a pollinator. I don't know. But no, I don't think the butterflies are going to bail us out on that.
Okay. Thanks, Dave, for calling. And let's go to Brad in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Brad.
How's it going, guys?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I got kind of a weird question, but I was picking up, I'm a cider, and I was picking up some foam, and I was listening to your butterfly stories and left for a moment to go out in the field to pick up the foam and come back, and there's a 2-inch caterpillar crawling on my shirt that I've never seen before. Wondering if you could tell me what that's going to be.
It's very hard to tell caterpillars. All I can do is ask a couple of questions. One of them is the kind of motion it has. Most people are familiar with inchworms, and as I was telling an earlier caller, if it has that kind of motion, then I could probably give you some idea what it is.
Yep,
it does.
Moves from front to back.
Yeah, that's an inchworm motion. That's a method. That's a type of moth called the geometrid moth. It's extremely widespread. Do you have trees? Did you walk by some trees?
Nope, it was just grass.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Camouflage color with yellow dots on its back.
Yeah, there's a wide variety of this group. It's a very large family of moths, but most of them are kind of a small moth. I always tell my students, I just love that name, geometrid, because the word geometry means to measure the earth, and people saw the inchworms moving, and they appear to be measuring the earth. good example of an insect that we know better from the caterpillar stage than we knew from adults. A lot of the adults will be kind of nondescript, brownish color moths that we hardly even notice, but we do notice the caterpillars. As far as going beyond that, I think you might have to check an author by the name of Wagner, a book on caterpillars.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, he's pretty big. He's about 2 inches long.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good size one. Brad, thanks.
That is.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, talk to you later. And Chris in Milwaukee, we turn to you next. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Excellent. I had a question. We were down in Georgia a couple of summers ago, and we saw these butterflies, and I've never seen butterflies act like this. I believe you were just talking about butterflies will leave their wings fanned out and then also together, and they were doing both. They were basically fanning them, like closed open. I was wondering if you knew what they were doing, because I've never seen a butterfly just sit there and do that.
Was there a group of them?
Yes, there's about three of them.
Yeah, okay, that may have something to do with a social standing of them. Butterflies will often have these groupings where they, for lack of a better term, they just kind of hang around, and it usually is the males. I have a friend who refers to gatherings like that as being the singles bar. What goes on among them could be social. On the other hand, it may have something to do with raising body temperatures. The wings of a butterfly are highly efficient solar panels, and they will raise the body temperature and allow them to do some movement. And I would have to know a little bit more about the butterfly and the circumstances, but I would say it's one of those two things that's going on.
Mm-hmm. All right, excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Are butterflies territorial?
Oh, yes, very. we don't see it in an immediate area. In other words, they don't make a nest and attack us like a red-winged blackbird might. But they are more territorial within a particular habitat. Like if you're going through a field, and in that field there are a few territorial butterflies, they might fly at you, yes. More than likely, they're going to fly at other insects. And if you just watch them, it's not at all unusual to see that happen.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There's something else, a couple of things, puddling and hilltopping.
Yes. Puddling is probably done. I have to say probably because I don't think everything has been figured out on these, but probably done to pick up both moisture and minerals. Now, in many cases, if the puddle involves water, that's what they're getting is the moisture. But I have seen them often in a just wet area on the ground. And in that case, they're picking up minerals. And if you watch them enough, you'll see them sticking their tongue down in that. Sometimes that can lead to congregations of huge numbers. I have seen, there's a small butterfly called the European Skipper. I have seen cases of literally hundreds, maybe even 1,000 gathered around a single puddle. So that may just be, that was the only place to get the minerals. Hilltopping is pretty much one of a territory. Perhaps it's a mating technique. Some people say that's where the males separate themselves and then go after females. It's called hilltopping because they tend to do that congregated more up on the hills. And if you are, a good example, we have up here the North Shore hiking trail, and I have seen by going up and down those ridges, I have seen cases where the butterflies will be up on the ridge, but they won't be down lower, and that's a lot of times what's going on.
Interesting. Debbie in Menominee Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. What can we do for you?
Yes, I had a quick question concerning butterfly houses. Do they really work? And if they do, what color should they be painted?
Okay, I don't know much about butterfly houses, but I will quote a friend of mine who does a lot of gardening. She refers to them as butterfly coffins. In other words, at least one person say they don't work at all. I think what happened, and there may be a listener out there who knows a lot more than I do, but I think what happened is a few years ago, bat houses caught on, and people started putting up bat houses, and somebody decided, well, let's check out, see if it works with butterfly houses as well. And so far, that's hasn't caught on like it has with bat houses. But who knows? Maybe somebody out there will call in. I have never seen them used, and I have never used them myself. So I'm limited, but I'm only quoting a friend.
Also, they're basically decorative artsy-fartsy things for your yard.
That's right. Probably true.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your help.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You know, Larry, you mentioned that you shot many of the photos that you took of butterflies. You shot right in your own backyard.
Yep.
How is it that you are able to attract all of those butterflies?
Oh, good question. I'm not much of a gardener. Any gardeners out there would probably see the humor in this comment, but the only plant I can grow is daylilies. I'm not much of a gardener, but I am an observer of wildflowers. And the way I am able to do it is I have learned to know what to look for, when to look for it, and then I have learned how to stalk butterflies. Stalking butterflies has become a lot easier in recent years with optics, especially the close-focus binoculars. Anybody serious about butterfly watching needs to get close-focus binoculars, you know, one that you can focus in like 6 feet away. Once you've observed the butterfly and you can slowly watch it, then you go into what I call the stalking through the lens. where you look at it through the camera and you keep getting closer and closer and closer until you get to the point where you want to photograph it. I also learned another little trick, and that is if the butterfly is sitting in front of me and it has its wings closed and I want to get a photo of it with its wings open, what I will do is lift my hand so that I'm casting a shadow on the butterfly. What that does is that lowers the temperature around the butterfly just a couple of degrees in the shadow of my hand, and then they will start to open their wings in order to warm up their body.
And that's when you take the picture.
Yeah, as long as you move slow, you move fast around butterflies, and they just disappear.
No.
So you've got to be patient. I think the answer to that the question is patience.
What now? Butterflies have what? They have three parts, don't they?
The body parts, yes,
yeah,
they do. They're a typical insect with three body parts: head, abdomen, and thorax. Yes.
And how do you distinguish butterflies from moths?
Terrific question. I was hoping you'd ask that. Okay.
Yeah.
It turns out it has a long, complex answer. What I usually tell people is what usually works. The most obvious answer that usually works is butterflies fly in the daytime. Moths usually fly at night. The trouble with that is I said the word usually, and there are lots of moths that fly in the daytime. However, most of them do fly at night. Next, if you look at the antenna, butterflies' antennas usually come out, have a swelling at the end, a kind of a club shape. Moths, on the other hand, are of two type. They have the little straight hair-like antenna, or they have the big feathery antenna that you see on the big moths like the Luna moths. There's a number of more things. As they develop, butterflies will usually make chrysalis. Moths will usually make cocoons, meaning they make it out of leaves or things like that. Notice I keep on saying usually. Yeah. There is only one difference that is consistent, and that is such a small one that even if you had the critter in your hand and a hand lens, you might have trouble seeing it. But it turns out all four of them have four wings. The butterfly's front wings and the hind wings are separated. They're not attached, but the moth's front wings and hind wings are attached by a little hook-like device. And that seems to be the only consistent one.
Oh, man.
But it's a terrific question.
The North American Butterfly Association uses, I know it's the month of July to conduct,
yes.
Do their population and species counts.
Yes.
What's involved with that?
Okay, those out there who do a bird count, a Christmas bird count, it started along the same parameters of that, as having a circle, and then within a circle you would try to see as many butterflies as you can within a single day. Now, those who've done the bird count, usually it's done with quite a few other people, and of course birds are easy to see, and it's done in the wintertime. Well, you take that same idea and apply it to something much smaller, butterflies in the summertime, it's really hard to see everything within the circle. So the way the count has evolved in many places, though they still suggest doing that, it has pretty much evolved around a certain park. And in Minnesota, I believe the last count time we had was 18 different butterfly counts. I think Wisconsin had something like 11 last year. And it's pretty much evolved around taking a particular site, a park, and seeing things as you wander around that in the course of a day. And you mark down not only the kind of butterfly, but how many of them. Now, a lot of counters go way beyond that, and they go on to male and female and immature and so forth. But for most people, it's just the numbers of butterfly, kind of butterfly, and the numbers of them.
And how long has this been going on?
It actually is older than what most people think. I got into it in the early 90s, and it had already been started in the 80s, probably about the mid-80s. I'd say it's a little bit over 20 years old right now. And it started out, it actually started before the organization started. The North American Butterfly Association didn't exist at that time, and it was a group called the Xerxes Society. Xerxes Society is named after a species of blue butterfly in California, which is thought now to be extinct because of development. And it was started to try to maintain the endangered invertebrates. The Xerxes Society still exists. It now works on mostly other invertebrates, other insects and such. Then the North American Butterfly Association came along. The North American Butterfly Association also does not does not suggest that we catch and pin butterflies. Once upon a time, anybody who studied butterflies caught them, put them in a killing jar, killed them, stretched out their wing, and pinned them. That worked fine for a long time, but right now, with optics being as they are, it is just not necessary. And so most of us who do butterfly observing don't bother with ever trying. I don't ever touch a butterfly net. But once upon a time, you know, that was done with birds. The early people who studied birds, they would shoot them and then kill them.
That's exactly right. Have you seen much, well, it's been since the 80s, are the counts holding constant for some, or are we losing some butterflies? You mentioned one. You mentioned the one in California, but...
Yeah, oh, there are definitely other butterflies that have gone. I think the word change is true. Whether that change is up or down, at least in Minnesota, I have not seen that as much. I think they certainly feel the impact of development. I think there's other things about the count, too, you have to realize. If you do the count in early July, there may be a species of butterfly, which is really very common, but doesn't show up until late July.
Yeah.
And so it does have its limitations. And to answer your question, whether it is a benchmark or whether it is a good indicator of populations of butterflies, I don't think that it can be relied on completely. It is certainly a good thing if you are consistent from one year to the next. You can certainly see some changes. In my neighborhood, as an example, we've had the influx of this alien butterfly called the European Skipper. And in one year, I counted it. I just had to estimate the count. It was several thousand that I had seen in one day. As the next few years have gone by, that number has dropped down a bit. So it remains to be seen how this animal is going to get absorbed into the system.
Dan in Montford will give you a chance. Hi, Dan.
Yes, I got a question about a moth. Hopefully you can answer.
Okay.
Okay, I think there's two. They're the same moth, but they're different colors, I believe. They're big. Some of them are about the size of your palm of your hand. And there'll be like a green color, like a real light green.
Mm-hmm.
And the other big ones like that are, I think, a brown color.
Yep, yep.
And then they come from a really big cocoon with a really tough mesh. And I'm just kind of curious what the caterpillar looks like.
Yeah.
And the moths, what their purpose is.
Well, the purpose is always something you can debate. I always tell people a mosquito, as an example, doesn't need to do anything except make baby mosquitoes. That's that is its purpose. However, if I can get to the moth, the light green one that you're referring to probably is the Luna moth. And I'm very glad you mentioned that. That is a well-loved moth. Most people want to see it. They frequently are seen in late May, early June. I have often seen them about mid-June up here. And they will not feed as an adult. They don't even have a mouth. They have their feeding done in the caterpillar stage, a large green caterpillar. The cocoon is on the ground. In the case of the brown ones, there are more than one. There's Cecropia, there's Polyphemus, and there is, which the third one escapes me right now, but I'll probably remember it. And all of them are large and brown, and they do the same thing. They emerge later in the summer, and they have large caterpillars, and the caterpillars feed on a variety of leaves, but when it comes to adults, they virtually don't feed at all. And like I said, I'm not sure if I can go beyond what I just said as far as their purpose goes.
Hmm.
Now, what was the name of the reason it is? I've already seen the big green one.
Oh, you have. Congratulations.
And then the big brown one. Actually, I've got one right now in my garage that just hatched, and I was just wondering what the name of that was.
Okay, like I say, there's three of them. There's Polyphemus, the Promethea. Polyphemus, Promethea, and what did I say was the third one? I can't seem to remember. It's Cecropia. Polyphemus, Promethea, and Cecropia.
Okay.
It's interesting that these large moths carry their Latin names for the most part.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yes, sure.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Larry, you have several appendices in your book, including phenology flight chart.
Yes.
You've got a checklist, a lot of good things to help us really see those butterflies.
Yes, thank you for noticing that. A lot of people don't get that far back in the book, but I agree with you. There is something worth noting. There's a checklist of the North American, the Northwoods butterflies. Most people who do any outdoor observing, especially in birds, they keep a long checklist. Well, you can do the same for butterflies. Then there is also a specialized habitat guide, bogs, wet meadows, oak, pine, barrens, etc. Then there is a phenology chart. Now, that doesn't include every butterfly in the list, but it keeps a lot of the common ones, and you really notice a flowing pattern from early in the spring to later in the summer. Then there is Appendix D, a favorite food list, which includes a lot of garden plants as well as the wild. We concentrate for the most part on the wildflowers, but many of them can be otherwise. And then Appendix E is a titles of interest, which is pretty impressive as well. And then Appendix F, please look at that, because butterfly, anybody watching butterflies needs to get the right kind of binoculars, and we talk about close focus as being very helpful in that. If that's not enough, it's also worth looking at a reference to day-flying moths that we have as well. There are several moths that will show up mostly in the day, and they may be confused with butterflies, and there's been some of them. I spent a long time trying to figure out what it was until I realized it was a moth.
Well, I tell you what, you've got a great book, Larry. And
Well, thank you.
Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to another visit.
Oh, yes, and it's with the weather coming on of summer, both insects and spiders will be terrific.
Thanks again, Larry.
Okay, take care.
Larry Weber, an award-winning Duluth science teacher, photographer, lecturer at the Marshall School. He's the author of Butterflies of the North Woods. It's the second edition. Get a hold of that. It's published by Kolath plus Stensis. He's also the author of Spiders of the North Woods, and that's distributed by Adventure Publications. But this new second edition has a lot of 125 species of North Woods butterflies. So we're really happy to have him with us, and we'll have him back, and we'll talk some more about spiders or butterflies. But coming up, we're going to be talking about dairy and livestock farming in Wisconsin and the School for Beginning Dairy and Livestock Farmers. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.